Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe.
Welcome back in, guys, to the You Ain't Lying podcast. Of course, I'm Travis Grimes. Of course, there's Nathan Hale. And of course, there's Stephen Buckridge. How are we doing tonight, guys?
Prost. Good evening.
Prost.
Good
today
evening,
was
guys.
A Monday. It was a Monday, right?
It was, yeah. A long Monday, but, you know, I'm doing well. Interesting weekend. You know, glad we at least got a point on Friday. We'll dive into that. But, yeah, man, let's keep pushing forward, as they say.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped. Typically, Mondays are pretty long work-wise, and, you know, beginning of the week, you're kind of down. But I don't know, with all these games and all the, you know, new signings and different discussions, I'm actually really excited. We got two games this week. We get the Chicago Fire tomorrow night, and then we get the Crew. Hell is Real Derby again at the end of the week on Saturday.
Yep. Fuck the Crew. So at the end of the show, we're going to have an interview with Matt Schabelman. He is from Men in Red 97. He covers Chicago Fire, and he has a podcast getting ready to start here in a week or two called Flaming Takes that will cover Chicago Fire and MLS. We interviewed him. That'll be at the end of the show. Of course, we're presented by MLS Aces. But the place to start is the DC United match. I will let Nate start because I know people hate my opinion on this. But, Nate, go ahead.
My opinion's a little more optimistic than yours, and it's still kind of feeding off last year in the sense that, like, last year was so terrible that getting a point isn't a bad thing, especially with our offense kind of coming into his own, with Lacadia getting a full 90 minutes really for the first time, you know, as who knows, like maybe Bundesliga. I'd have to dig that up, but I would probably when he was on loan in the Bundesliga. So giving him a full run out, and we saw he's obviously not 100%, whether that's form, whether that's health, to be determined. Some of the midfield pairings were questionable at first, you know, bringing Alan Cruz. Alan Cruz came in and boom, here you go. So the whole match itself, again, I'm optimistic. I saw a lot that I liked. And when I compare like to dislike, there wasn't as much that I disliked. Finishing was a little bit questionable. You know, some of the shots we took, low percentage, if you will, in terms of actually beating the keeper. Lacadi looked okay, as I mentioned that. De Jong, I'll hit on that here in a little bit. I don't know where he was or what he was doing. He picked up a quote-unquote knock in the first half, and Cruz came in and kind of changed the game. And I'll give it up to Joe Joao again, man, like a stud. Best player on the pitch, in my opinion. That play, he had two plays really that stood out to me. The play where it was him one on four, and he just kind of played the ball in the space and just said, catch me. And nobody could down the right side. And then he had a play later where I mentioned this on a Patreon post where he lost possession of the ball. He literally tripped over the ball, which it happens, right? To the best of us, it's happened to Ronaldo. It's happened to Messi. He tripped over the ball, but most players are done, right? You lose possession. And Jao's one mentality, but two athletic ability, like he recovered possession. There's not a whole lot of players that are able to do that and able to do it in that fashion. So those are my takeaways. We keep building on it. 300 minutes consecutive without allowing a goal in. So I don't think that's happened since our USL days, I'm pretty sure. So if I'm looking at glass half full, there's some positive stuff there. But I'll toss it over to Steven. Get your thoughts on it. You're a little more analytical than I am when it comes to this stuff.
Well, definitely it was a rusty start for FC Cincinnati coming back out. It looked like they were off for 3 weeks. Looks like the turf has been off for 3 years. Boy, that turf was horrific. You know, it's interesting because I was actually okay with a point, okay with the draw after the match. But the more I went back and looked at it, I really have to label this as a missed opportunity for 3 points. And it probably aligns with more what Travis felt right after the match. But you mentioned it. Joe Joao has been the MVP for this club since Stam has arrived. He has done everything we've asked. He's shown the fight. He is, like you said, he took on four DC United players in white jerseys, beat them, then beat a fifth player and got the free kick. But I'm going to bring up three players that I thought had very good games outside of Joao, and that was Tom Pederson. I think Tom Pederson's, it was his coming out party. He showed what he can do as a center back or left center back in a five back formation, his positioning, his understanding and read of the game and when to step out and to defend and to intercept the ball was marvelous. I also thought that Alan Cruz has finally shown to Jaap Stam, hey, I'm a person in this midfield that you need to have in this match or in these games to be able to unlock some of these defenses. I mean, his through ball to Locadia, that could have been the winner, and I don't blame Locadia. He beat Hamid, and it's a millimeter off from being in the net. But Alan Cruz, ever since he came on at halftime, he changed the metronome of that midfield. And then the third player I'm going to bring up in a positive light is Titi. I mean, he didn't have a lot to do, but in the first 20 minutes, he made two very good saves. His positioning in net has been fantastic. You know, we've always known he's been a great shot stopper, but when we've needed him to make sure that we keep the ball out of the net for those 300 minutes, he has been there. You mentioned De Jong. He was a disappointment for me. I just don't know if it was a role or a position. Maybe he wasn't healthy even starting the match. But along with De Jong, Stanko and Duplain also, I thought, had kind of stock down games for FC Cincinnati last weekend. Travis?
Yeah, so I've never kind of been high on Duplain. I think we kind of get enamored with the fact where he's not like overly bad and that he played every match. It doesn't make you good. Again, another lackluster performance from him. Caleb Stanko looked not great, to say the least. He had some turnovers where, you know, if Paul Areola or Felipe are, you know, healthy, if, you know, Edson Flores is playing in those spots, they probably get a goal there. I was not as high on the draw as everybody else. Reason being, like I mentioned, Paul Areola not playing, hurt. Felipe suspended. Edson Flores starts on the bench, doesn't play but maybe 25 minutes. DC United is wounded. They played, and I know people are going to point out they had draws in MLS's back. They did not look good at all. They were lucky to get away with those draws. They haven't looked good since the restart. They didn't look good the other night. And I felt like FC Cincinnati was content with being just average for a lot of the match. When Cruz came on, you know, the second half was a little bit different. It looked more positive, at least in the first 10 to 15 minutes of him being on. But then again, you know, the last 15 minutes, it was kind of meh. You play a lot with the ball in the back. DC United was exhausted after the first 20 minutes. You could see it. They high pressed so hard trying to get that goal to where they could hunker down and play 11 behind the ball that they exhausted themselves. And we just didn't take advantage of it. FC Cincinnati's back three were content kind of passing it back and forth. I think they were kind of shell-shocked after the first 20 minutes, and they were kind of gun-shy because of the high press. But I just wasn't impressed. Like, I get it. It's a huge upgrade over 2019. I totally get that. We would have been so happy with this draw last year. Part of me playing devil's advocate on that is, when are we going to stop referring to our matches and comparing them to last year? When is the moment that we start to expect more out of our club? I get the reason why we won two matches in MLS's back is because we played an extremely low block and hit teams with a random kind of counter that resulted in a goal. I get it, you know, but Locadia, healthy. De Jong, healthy. All these guys are healthy now. We've got our, you know, maybe we're missing, you know, a six that we just signed. We'll talk about him in a minute. Yeah, you know, we were still kind of playing a 5-3-2, trying to play a 3-5-2. He was working De Jong in at the second striker position, which didn't work out well. He tried Kubo at the 10, which didn't work out well, but they made tactical changes. There were opportunities there for them to push forward, get a goal or two, and just put it away. And the one question that I ask people, because they asked me, you know, if Locadia scores, how do you feel? I'm happy with the win. I'm not impressed. Like, I'm not overly impressed. Maybe I should say overly impressed. I'm impressed you got 3 points. I'm impressed it wasn't awful, right? Because I'm kind of conditioned to think that matches are going to be awful. But I just, My question to people is, if Lakatia doesn't get that chance, if he doesn't hit the post, which shot was dangerous? We didn't have one. We didn't have a real shot on net. We didn't have a real dangerous scoring chance outside of Lakatia hitting the post. Against a full go, fully healthy DC United team, I'm happy with 0-0 draw and only one shot. Against a team that's missing their three best players, not happy. Nate?
Yeah, I'll answer your question, man, because I've probably been the biggest advocate of referring back to last year as kind of the baseline, and that's, to your point, that's not the right thing to do, especially if you want to be an annual contender, if you want to change the mentality of not only this team, but sports in the city, right? That's hit article after article, conversation after conversation, that FC Cincinnati is not the Reds, is not the Bengals. I think the minute for me to answer your question to really where I say, okay, let's go, is this is going to sound kind of bad, but this year it was more about optimism for me with COVID, no fans. If we're in Nippert, that's a win. That's 3 points. If the fan base is behind the club in Nippert last weekend, that's 3 points. But until Nykamp has the roster turnover, until he has his guys in, until Stom has his guys in, he's really implemented a 4-3-3, if that's where we land, or if it's a 3-5-2, if that we decide, hey, that's going to be our best route going forward. Until we have that solidity, and that comes this offseason with roster turnover, I don't expect much. And that's, again, me kind of being glass half full and just kind of enjoying not being terrible and not having everybody point the finger and go, oh, God, you know, Cincinnati's terrible. Louisville should be in MLS, not them. Or Nashville even throwing shade at us, you know, whatever that is. But that, to answer your question, that's where I'm at. I confidently can say Nykamp and Stom have their guys, and the decisions that were made coming in MLS with the expansion team, some of these players, I'm not going to badmouth anybody. We've done that enough. But until some of these guys have moved on, I'm not going to have that expectation. Now, next year, you know, everybody's always pointed to 2021, the new stadium, the team, the big DP, whoever that is. And we'll talk on young DPs here in a minute. But until we have that roster that's quote-unquote been promised to us, and that's a fair statement or a fair word to use is promised, until that happens, I'm not going to have that expectation. But bet your ass, next year, you know, in a new stadium with potentially big-money DPs in small-market Cincinnati, that expectation is going to be there, and that's going to be a lot of pressure on Wonyap Stom and the front office and even Nykamp. So it'll be interesting. It'll be fun. If we're good, it'll be amazing. But until then, I'm kind of waiting my time to answer your question. So, but that's a perfect transition right into transfers, right? You mentioned a midfield six coming in. We mentioned him last week, you know, Camo Mokito or Mococho, however you say it. Mococho is we're learning. But yeah, you know, the big question is, we know we've got him. It's announced by the club, initially leaked by one person on this podcast as a rumor, quote unquote.
Steven, aww. Why'd you leak that?
Oh, come on, bud. But
it's always my fault, isn't it?
I totally made it up.
You're good at that. But when does he get here? That's the big question. You know, when does he come overseas? How long does that visa take? So I'll let you guys kind of hit on that. I'm excited to have him. The more I've done homework, the more I understand his character, that he is absolutely a character guy, which is amazing. The nickname, the general, fits him to a T, but I'll let you guys kind of hit. I'll toss it over to you, Steve. And what do you think he gets over here?
Yeah, that's a great question of when he comes over here. Let me start with this though. To be frank, ever since, Harris Madunian was signed back, you know, on the off season. And I kind of hammered this a little bit in Twitter back in January and February specifically. He's not a typical pure central defensive midfielder as we see in a number six. There's a reason the Union were allowing him to leave on a free. The Union had to protect him with cover in a 4-2-3-1 or in a diamond. They put somebody right in front of him. And don't get me wrong, I really like Harris Madunian as a player. I think he's a great person. I think he's high character. I think he's wonderful for bringing along youth, you know, players or younger players, you know, like we've gotten Frankie. But he really presented formation difficulty for this team, because we're coming off a season that we let 75 goals in, a record for MLS, and we bring in a number six to sit in front of that back line that really has no interest in playing defense. And so it was kind of apparent for a long time, and we've been talking about it, that we needed a true number six to unlock this midfield. And that was messing with the pairings and the formation and who could you put out there with Amaya or Cruz or De Jong. And so, you know, bringing Camajalo in, I think is just really a fantastic move by Gerard and the club to say, okay, yeah, we understand to go from more of a defensive approach and a five back mindset with, you know, having the two wing backs, but we want to move towards more of a possession based attacking 4-3-3. The key to that was having a real number six, and to have someone of his experience, he's not that old, but look at the number of years that he's already had in the Eredivisie. He's had in the Champions League in England. Here's a guy that comes in on a free. We're going back and forth whether he's going to be a TAM signing or a non-TAM signing, but he's not breaking the bank. And it looks like, you know, in some of the interviews that we've seen, he wants to be here. He's ready to come over here. He wants to play for Coach Stam, and he wants to be part of this team. It's how soon can we get him? And that's the biggest question mark, as you mentioned, Nate, is with everything going out in the world, you know, I was just talking to a buddy in Croatia earlier today. They're locking things back down in Europe right now. The EU is locking. If you go from Croatia to Austria, you're going to have a 2-week quarantine. So unfortunately, it may be a couple weeks to 3 weeks before we get Camo over here, get his paperwork processed, get, you know, things moving that he can come over and be part of the team. Travis, yeah. What's your thoughts on that?
And it's weird because you just mentioned the 2-week thing. And then the CDC releases yesterday that anybody that flies to the U.S. from Europe doesn't have to quarantine for 2 weeks anymore. It's like it changes daily. So who knows? I mean, I know the club thinks he'll be here in about a week or two. I don't foresee that happening, especially visa paperwork, quarantine, getting a flight over here. I know Carl Lindner has his ways. There's a reason his managers and his coaches and his GM could fly pretty much freely from Europe to the U.S. It's no mystery. What Camo adds to the midfield is, like you said, it's that true six. But what makes Camo a little bit different than, you know, some of the true sixes we see in Europe is he's also a good distributor. He's a willing passer. He kind of does what Madunian does with the ball, kind of sprays it to the wings. He's a pretty good passer when it comes to through balls to the front three. He has the ability to almost morph into an eight at times. He's smaller, 5'6", 5'7", maybe. No, he's not Conte, but he does well for his size. I mean, he had the Achilles injury, but other than that, he's not really been hurt a whole lot for his size. I mean, he's 29 years old. He's essentially still in his prime. He has enough pace. He's a good passer. He's a really good defender. I mean, if you watch highlights on him, the guy drops down to right back sometimes to defend a midfielder or to defend a winger. He can drop down into a center back role in a back three from a, you know, 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2 or a 4-3-3, however they decide to attack from that formation. He's known to be able to drop into that center back role and kind of play out of there as well. So, like you said, we needed a six to kind of unlock the midfield to kind of take pressure off people defensively. You know, we've been really good with the back three being Waston, Pedersen, Deplon, and then maybe when Van der Werf comes back, he can replace Deplon. But those guys have been really good. And then you add a six in front of them who can drop down to the right back, who can help them out a ton. Then it takes the pressure off Jao and Gutman to a large extent. So maybe they don't track back too much. Maybe they can stay up the field a little bit more. So on the counterattack, so when we have possession, there's more options for Lacadia, because against DC United, that's where my frustration came. Lacadia's holding the ball up, and he's holding the ball for 30 seconds, and there's nobody within shouting distance. So I think Camo is the key here. I know there's another kid we want to talk about, but for right now, I think Camo is exactly what this club needed. Gerard saw he needed it, and he went and got it.
I'm excited for him, man. Once he gets here, to your point, I think it, use that terminology, unlocks. I think it gives us so many more options just from a formation standpoint and having confidence within the team. I'll keep it on this conversation, then we'll switch over to the other transfer talk that's more or less happening but not happening yet. But my big question right now is midfield. And you hit on Madunian and Steven, and You've got Amaya, you've got Cruz, you've got DeJong, you've got Camo coming in. Medunjanin, although he just had a kid and he's not in the country, is still on this roster. You got Stanko. You mentioned him, you know, in terms of just his performance. Like, this team is still loaded with midfielders. We moved to Fatai and kind of opened up some space, and yeah, Camo kind of comes in and fills that roster spot. What does this look like going forward? And who's the odd man out? Or is there one? Do you just rotate and kind of maybe, you know, DeJong plays your 10? And if he's not playing the 10, who does? Is Amaya and Cruz bouncing in and out? So there's a lot of talent there, but you've got essentially four starting midfielders and typically three spots. So I'd love to get your guys' take. Again, I'll toss it over to your side, Steven. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we could see with Camajalo being in there that you could have an Amaya and Cruz almost as two eights. And I know Travis likes to talk about having two eights in that midfield, but it allows Stom to experiment a little bit more. You know, we've got five matches left in phase one where we're honestly not going to have Camajalo. So we're going to see who we have for the next five matches. It's going to be those phase two and phase three matches that'll come later, you know, in September and October. And then we, you know, knock on wood, get into the playoffs come November. And it, but it allows Stom to really experiment with that. I think from a who's left out, I think it's Medunjanin. You know, I think Stanko is going to be a solid bench, you know, sub as you need him to spell Camo or to spell other people at the right time. But I think this now will be able to allow Yop to look at playing, you know, Amaya and Cruz together, or playing Amaya and DeJong in front of Camo, or playing Cruz and DeJong in front of Camo. And we've got some time to figure that out. Because honestly, Yop wants to see what he wants to evaluate some of these different mixes of the players on the field, because come December, January, as we get into the primary transfer window, we're going to see that next roster rehaul. And so I think Medunjanin is the probably the player that's out, whether, you know, whether he comes back and finishes out the season, whether he's a bench player or whether he doesn't come back. That's the question right now.
Yeah. Before we move on, the you mentioned DeJong. People were really critical of him in the first 45 minutes. Deservedly so. He was not very good. However, Yop was trying to play him as a second striker, and I think that was a big mistake. He's not at the level of his career where he can do that, where he can have three guys around him escape and then make a good pass. He's a 10. He has to have space. If he doesn't have space, he can't distribute, and he's not any good to you. So it will be interesting to see if he ever puts Cruz and DeJong together in front of Camo. I would really like to see it. Now, some more rumors I made up that somehow I was right about. A couple days ago, I told you guys it was done. Some people told me it was done, and then other media were skeptical to say it was done. It's been done this whole time, and now it's official. Alvaro Barrial from Velez. He is a member of the U-20 Argentinian national team. He's a winger. Pacey, a ton of potential. If you have watched highlights of him, the real highlights, not like the two-second ones with crappy music, but like real highlights, he's really, really good. Do I think he comes in and starts right away? Probably not. He's going to take some time to get used to the culture, used to Yop Stom's training regimen. But I think before the end of the season, again, depending on when he gets here, he's going to be the starting right winger here. And then they're going to start moving towards that 4-3-3, and we're really going to see what this club has. And it'll give Gerard a good idea going to the primary transfer window, kind of what this club is looking at, what it needs. You know, who can he re-sign out of the 10 guys who are going to be out of the contract, and who he can. So, Nate, kind of your first impression of the winger.
First impression, man, if I'm being completely honest, and you guys can all judge me for this, but I know that name from FIFA. It sounds dumb, but nice. Like, it's true. Like, at the root of a lot of the homework that I do is just playing FIFA, playing career mode, and like, I recognize that name. And I recognize him as a wonder kid, as they say, as a youth prospect that has high potential. And he fits that mold. That is to the T of what Barrial is, or Alvarito, I think is his nickname, what I kind of picked up on Twitter the other night, you know, people saying goodbye to Alvarito. So kind of a cool nickname. But we've had a Argentinian winger here in Cincinnati before. I don't know if you guys have heard of him. His name's Manu, and he's a club legend. And I'm not drawing a comparison. I'm not even going to go there. But I'm saying we've had success in that route, or in that aspect. So tying it all back together, he's young, Travis. I don't expect him to start either. He's 20. He didn't start at Velez. Now, Velez is a top-tier Argentinian team. They finished third last year behind, I want to say, Boca Juniors and River Plate, which are two globally recognized teams, the top two teams historically, the last 50-100 years in Argentina. So I expect him to come in and compete and kind of get his feet wet. He's never left Argentina outside of, like, international competition with the U-20 team. He's never left that country. He's never played professionally outside of that country. And this past year, he only got, I want to say, 5 appearances with the top team. Now Velez is a stout team. Like, he was behind some pretty top-tier talent. But he said goodbye Sunday night, last night on Twitter, to his fans, to the club. He's going somewhere. And he's linked to us. And to your point, Travis, it's essentially official. So who knows when he gets here. But it's the first move we really have made as a team. Now, Alan Cruz kind of fits this mold, too, and I kind of hit on that on our Patreon again, not to plug that, but just being honest. He's the first player we've really brought in that's super young, but has high potential and has a high ceiling. And we're paying, essentially, the rumor is $1.5 to $1.7 for him. There's some performance-based incentives in there. But this is a guy that maybe he stays here for 3 or 4 years, and at 23, 24, coming into his prime, we move on. And I'm not going to compare him to Barco or Miggy Almiron or anything like that, because he's not that same player. Barco is not a terrible comparison, but he's Barco light just based upon prospect aspect. But I'm excited that we're actually doing that. It's the first real move that I've seen where we've got a player coming in that's going to help us immediately, but potentially help us more so down the line. So, Steven, I'll toss it over to you, man. Like, what are your thoughts?
It's interesting because, Gerard gets critiqued sometimes about being single-minded, single-approached, Dutch this, Dutch that. But obviously the connection to Alvarito, that's a great nickname, so we're going to stick with that. The connection to Alvarito is that both Gerard and Stam knew him or knew about him and were kind of tracking him. And there's some connection with respect to, the player agent and Stam's agency. And so there is a connection, but it's really interesting to watch Gerard, how he works in these transfer markets. He said it 2 weeks ago. I want a different type of midfielder. Bingo. We get Camajalo. I want a pacing winger. Now we're talking about Alvarito. I agree. This is a perfect player that fits where MLS wants teams, and they're going to credit teams. They're going to give teams, lesser hit against the salary budget for bringing in young players like this. And so it's a great move that, honestly, Gerard kind of scripted 2 weeks ago when he said, I'm looking at a pacey winger coming in. I'm interested, Travis, because you said right wing. I know he's played combination left wing and right wing, and there's a lot of discussion and probably a lot of good debate that's going to go on about the ability to have, you're strong-footed on the opposite side of the wing and cut in and be able to take a shot or cross, et cetera. But to have Kubo on one side, to allow Alvarito to kind of get his feet wet, not a lot of too much expectation out of the gate to say, okay, come on in, get settled, understand your new teammates, understand Coach Stam's desires, and let him just go. Let him play on the wing and just go and have some fun. I think it's a great fit for Alvarito. I think it's a great fit for this club to bring him in.
Yeah, everything you need to know about this kid is, the same thing with Camo. Go look at Brentford's supporters when they allowed Camo to leave on a free. They were not happy. Go look at Velez's supporters when they're realizing Alvarito is leaving to come to us. They're not happy. Those are two really, really good players. Obviously, Alvarito, we're going to have to wait a little bit. But my thought with, it's not just about the shooting when I want a left-footed winger on the right side. It's also about a through ball. Think about it like this. How is it easier to play a through ball to the center of the field when your best foot's on the outside or when your best foot's on the inside? It's definitely the inside. So, I'm sure, as a striker, I'd rather see the ball coming the whole time. It's not easy to see when a winger is going to play a through ball when his other hip is in front of the ball. So, it just with Kubo and with, eventually Alvarito on the wings, I would love to see them cut inside. I would love to see Lacadia make runs in front of center backs and, the wingers kind of tuck that ball behind the back four and then you're through. But also have that ability to just launch a shot when you do cut inside. I've never been a fan of dribble the ball in the corner and cross it. I've unless you have Zlatan as your nine, that's just not, or Lewandowski. Like, the success rate of that is, to me, just not worth it. Of course, I've always been a fan of, like, the Barcelona tiki-taka kind of possession-based. Like, that's what I prefer. But until we get that international spot, we're not gonna see Alvarito officially. Now, with that international spot, and I kind of want to play it from this angle, and I'll start, and then we'll go around like we always do. It's kind of becoming predictable, but I kind of like the way this is. If I'm Gerard, I just wait for the green cards now. All these clubs have kind of, pitted against him to like, oh, we know what you need. Here's the price. Let's just wait for the green cards now. And then look at the clubs and say, okay, you want this top allocation spot? We don't need the international spot. We want money. And then now you can play, your upper hand, because Gerard doesn't want to use that allocation spot. He doesn't want an American that may not want to be here. Like, I know people throw Matt Miazga at me all the time. I don't see him wanting to come here. I think he'll just take another loan, even though I don't think that's smart. Kamar Lawrence, I don't know that I want that attitude. I mean, I know I was high on him, and I still am. Like, I would still love the idea of him at left back. But I know culture and attitude are huge for Gerard. It's why he didn't sign Maximiliano Romero from PSV to be the nine. So I just hold on to it. I just wait for the green cards. Because, again, like I talked about before, Uncle Carl has his way of getting things done. If he just needs to make a phone call. That's pretty much it. So, Nate, if you're Gerard, do you wait for the green cards, or do you go after it to try to get an international spot to get Alvarito official as soon as possible?
First and foremost, let's not forget Aunt Meg, too. Aunt Meg's got some pull just the same. I know she's not necessarily the figurehead of the ownership group, but she invested $100 million, so she absolutely has a voice. But to answer your question, it's twofold. I think you think about it, like a couple of weeks ago, we're all up in arms like, oh, we missed out on Tyler Blackett because we didn't have an international spot. And here we are 3 weeks later, 2 weeks later, like, oh, well, like with what we've brought in, and Gerard has crushed it in that aspect. So you've got the two green cards coming in with TT and Van der Werf, who's back and in training, mind you. He was training on social media. So definitely good from that perspective with the center back depth. But right now, man, I'm with you, Travis. I just kind of wait. The Miazga aspect, first question is, do I want him here? Yeah, I do. 50% of that is entertainment value, just because he is so fun to watch. I mean, it really is. As a fan, just... Yeah, because what is he going to do, man? Like, he's kind of Dekel smash, right? What about, Miazga smash? That's the thing to piggyback off Knifey Lion. But I kind of want him here from that. And Stom has that connection. Stom could probably say, hey, man, come on over. There's some questions if he's allowed to with, the Red Bulls and his ownership rights. But Kamar Lawrence, I've always been very hesitant there. We just haven't had success with that type of player. We have two prime examples. I don't think it fits. And Gutman is probably going to be here. I think if he continues to perform the way he is, I think we find a way to continue to loan him from Celtic until he gets his international status, if that happens, if he continues to progress. Or we just kind of buy him from Celtic. He wouldn't be terribly expensive, I wouldn't think, at least at this point in his career. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Travis. I think we played the long game. I can't play the long game, and it absolutely worked. He's got one international spot that he's already used on Camahilo coming in. We're going to open up another for Alvarito, as we say. There's still one left, and you've got the allocation spot to either open up some money or whatever we do with it. If we trade it and there's still an international spot for TT or Van der Werf, whatever green card you're going to use to fill that in. So there's definitely some just options. And again, you kind of look at it from previously, it's kind of cool. Like, I think in the future, like when we bring in a DP, who do we bring in? Like, as we kind of build this roster and look at it, where's the weak point? And with every signing, that weak point gets less and less obvious, which is good and bad. I mean, it's good from a talent perspective. It's bad because somebody that we're going to care about, somebody we like to play, isn't going to be a starter anymore eventually. But I'll toss it over to you, Steven. Like, I'm all for just kind of waiting it out and see what happens, but we have to use that allocation spot. At the end of the season, that goes over to essentially the worst team in the league, which we're not going to be this year. Thanks, Nashville. But we're not going to be the worst team in the league this year. So, Steven, I'll toss it over to you. What would you like to see?
Yeah, and I think Austin will actually get the allocation spot being the expansion franchise. But you're right, it expires. You know, we're end of August now, and that allocation spot, it could either just rot on the vine or it can be utilized. You know, what Gerard did mention 2 weeks ago, the third position was, well, he actually said starting defenders, plural, whether that was just a slip and maybe, you know, as English as a second language, didn't mean it as a plural, but I do think he's still looking at, you know, a starting defender being brought in. And so that's on his target list. That's on his radar. But you mentioned it as you know, a couple weeks ago, we were like, oh, geez, we missed out on Blockett. Ah, stinks that we didn't have that international roster spot. Well, 2 weeks later, I'd much rather have Kamahello and Alvarito coming in than Blockett, to be honest. And so I agree with this philosophy of the long game, in that we don't know what's going to happen with Harris Manoonian. We don't know how quickly these green cards are going to come about. There still are trade discussions in the works between other clubs and us with respect to that allocation spot. But Gerard has options. And we know that he's working many irons in the fire at one time. It's not just one and hoping it goes through. Blackett was a iron in the fire. People were like, oh, geez, we missed out on that. No, he had all these different irons in the fire. It came out. They've been talking to Kamahello since what? January, right? Yep. How long we've been talking to Alvarito? Stom knows Alvarito for a couple of years now. There are probably a dozen different people that we are pursuing, not rumors, pursuing again. And it's remarkable, Travis, how many times that you make something up that becomes true. It's just, you should go out of Vegas and make like some sort of bet.
Well, I've got a lot of money. I got a $20 parlay on all the baseball games right now. So if I'm going to make stuff up and being a gambler, hopefully I win some decent amount of money tonight. But yeah, I mean, I make stuff up all the time and just hit, you know, it's just making up rumors and being like 7 for 7 in the last seven. It's batting 1,000 for those wondering. Yeah, I kind of think that we will see at least one defender. Everybody who's a Patreon read my last update. As you know, the last couple of updates have included Camo for a reason. I've also talked about him before he signed on this podcast for a reason. I tweeted about him for a reason. So with that said, yeah, I mean, the cap space is going to be kind of eh. They're probably going to have to make a move to get rid of someone to make up, you know, the cap space, maybe get some targeted allocation money to sign a starting level back four member. I kind of think it's going to be a left back. They wanted Blackett. They didn't get him. They've targeted Calvin Verdonk. I don't know where the talks are there. I kind of don't think it's closed. I think they're just, you know, talking. But I think it's going to be a left back. I think they like what they've seen from Waston. I still don't think he's a fit if they go 4-3-3. Part of me hopes that they don't go 4-3-3. The more I look at it, I kind of would like to see them stick with a 3-5-2, but be more aggressive, obviously. Especially now that you got Camo, you can be more aggressive. But we'll kind of just have to wait and see. We'll know what they're deciding to do if we all of a sudden see Waston gone. If we start seeing a Pedersen Vanderwerf pairing in the midfield in the back four, Camo immediately in front of them, kind of the wing backs doing what they're normally doing, we'll know they're going to 4-3-3. So let's move on to the fire match. We like I mentioned earlier, we interviewed Matt, who covers Chicago Fire for Men in Red. He's getting ready to start a podcast called Flaming Takes. Before we do our rants and get to his interview, I kind of wanted to talk with you guys. The Fire really impressed me with their counterattacking against the Crew in the first half. Is that a concern for you, Nate?
It is. I'm just going to pause for a second, and I'm going to just throw an idea out there, and then we'll get to the Fire match. What DP do you pair with Licata in a 3-5-2? Think about it. All right, moving on. Yes, not a bad idea. But Fire match, yeah, man, counterattack, I think we're vulnerable. We bunkered down that first 20, 25 minutes versus DC United, and we held on. We kind of held our own, and that's just because of lack of attacking options. They had, as you mentioned, Travis, a lot of their top-tier talent wasn't in the match, whether suspension on the bench for whatever reason, just, again, kind of a weird situation, or injured, right? Paul Areola, who's arguably their best player, out injured. So I fear we get too confident too quickly, and that sounds crazy to think, but for the latter part of that DC match, we had possession. It was probably the first game. Like, dive back. When was the last game we had the majority of possession for a game? It's probably been, I would argue, USL days. So that gives me some pause in the sense that if we tried to do the same thing, a team like the Chicago Fire, who looked very good on the counter versus the Crew this past weekend, can take advantage of it. Now, they didn't finish anything. That's why it was 3-0 and a loss to the Crew, but they definitely had opportunities. They just didn't take advantage. So that's my biggest fear, is that we just get too confident, or we make a mistake with that confidence and the Fire make us pay. And now we're down 1-0, which we haven't really been in that position this season. We haven't really been down. We can fight back, but I don't know. I trust the team to fight back. That doesn't scare me in that thought process, but more or less, I think we're susceptible to the break and even high press in that regard. So I'll toss it over to you, Steven. What's your biggest fear, I guess, from the Fire?
Yeah, and it kind of follows what you guys are talking about. It's a couple guys, Georgi Mihailovic, you know, a young U.S. Up-and-comer. He's played on U-23 teams for the U.S. Youth National Team. He will get a shot at some point for the senior team. And then Przemysław Frankowski, who's TD's Polish friend. They are pretty talented wingers. And to your point, if we are, you know, in this 3-5-2 and 5-3-2 going into the 3-5-2, you know, Gutman and Zhao have done a fantastic job as our wingbacks, but they're going to get spent at some point. And this is the second match in 4 days. They worked hard against DC United. And so I am a little bit fearful that Mihailovic and Frankowski could make some hay on the counter, or even just their pace down the wings. It's going to be a great matchup between midfields. I think that it's going to be you know, interesting to watch who takes control of the midfield, because I'm not, you know, the Chicago Fire are built off of more possession style with their midfielders, but they haven't really shown that in their games yet. And then you've got Rolly Stahm that's kind of taken the approach of, let's kind of wait and let's see what the opposition does for the first 20 minutes, and then we'll gauge further. So it's going to be a battle of the midfield, and I do fear Mihailovic and Frankowski. If one of those two breaks away and is able to serve Berich, and the Fire gets up early, then we could be in trouble.
Agreed. I will say one thing. We're going to kind of let the interview preview this Fire match. We had Matt on for about 25 minutes. He did a great job. We kind of gave our match preview with him. Before I get to the rants, the one thing I want to mention is when Lacadia scores, it's going to be, I think it's going to open the floodgates. That's just my prediction. He's been close twice. I think once he sees the ball hit the back of the net, you're going to see him hit the back of the net a lot. I think he scores a brace against the Fire, and I'm really confident in that. Now, on to the rants. I'm not going to rant. I did want to do kind of a PSA here, and I'll try to tread lightly. When You Ain't Lying started, we did not foresee any of this happening. Please know that. We did not, you know, see us being as popular as we are. At times, we're like a top 50 sports podcast in the country. That's crazy to us. We did not expect to start a Patreon and to have the support that we've had on there. We are going to pay that support back. We are going to have some merchandise, some giveaways around the corner here once we get that settled with some designs and stuff. And we'd also hope to bring you some comprehensive coverage that it does not look like we're going to be able to do for right now. And that's okay. I'm not angry. Maybe a little disappointed, but just not angry. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. I know I was going to take a break. Of course, Alvarito announcing, of course, I can't actually take a break. I was off Twitter for like 6 hours. But, you know, that's not going to be possible right now for us to do some different things. We hope to maybe revisit that in the future. I know some people reached out to me, kind of concerned me we're going to go away. We're not going away. My wanting to take a Twitter break was me not wanting to lash out for any reason, to be mean, to say anything I was going to regret. So with that said, we are going to push forward. We're going to continue to give you content every day, as much as we can, as quality as it can be. Like Nate said before, competition really is helpful here. Knifey Lion Radio and Cincinnati Soccer Talk do a great job. That makes us want to be better. I know I've talked to the Cincinnati Talker Talk guys. It makes them want to be better. I don't know about Knifey Lion because they're just those guys are so fucking creative and so good at what they do. Like even when they're making fun of me, like I still love it. Okay, 99% of the time, maybe 95%. But yeah, so we're gonna keep trying to put out as much content as we can, as good as it can be. Again, some of the extra things we were hoping to try to get involved with. You guys probably know what I'm talking about. Not going to be possible right now, but maybe in the future, maybe when some things smooth over and we can kind of learn from our mistakes and go from there. So with that said, that's all I got. Who's next?
I'll take it from there, Travis. And it's interesting because you didn't really have a rant. You just had a good PSA there. First, coming into this week, I'm extremely thankful, just thankful that we have the ability as three guys who love soccer, who love this club, love this city, get to talk about and report and put out content with respect to this team. I did put something out on Twitter yesterday. The kingdom is big enough, and that's what frustrates me a little bit, is for us to be as successful as we want as a team, as a club in this city, to engage new fans, to educate new fans, to allow fans to have a voice, to allow fans to access media content. That's what we're trying to do. And I'm just thankful that we've been able to do that. You know, as you mentioned, the Patreon was not on your and Nate's thoughts when you guys started this podcast earlier this year. And, you know, honestly, credit to both of you for creating You Ain't Lying and where it is today. It is in the top 50 of podcasts of soccer week over week when you look at the numbers. And, you know, since we opened a Patreon, you know, several weeks ago, in 3 weeks, we've had over 29 posts. We've had a lot of great engagement. We've had a lot of wonderful comments. We've had allowed, you know, the patrons of the Patreon to go back and forth and comment with each other on Slack or whether it's on the Patreon account. But we're comprehensive. We're not just focused on transfer news and transfer talk. We're not just focused on talking about game analysis. It's everything. We're looking at all aspects of this team. We are looking at the roster news. We're looking at what Gerard is doing. Look at how our buddy, Nick's come along. He's had two fantastic articles on the Patreon talking about, you know, total soccer, the Dutch system. Then he's talking about the DNA of this club and how Gerard and Jaap are taking it and compared it to another team in Europe and England. We are talking about transfer talks and news. That's part of world soccer. If you follow any European team, any South American team, any Mexican team, transfer news and transfer talk is a large part of what the fan base is interested in and what it's commented on. So I'm darn proud of what you two have kind of created here at You Ain't Lying, and we're not going to stop. We're going to continue to put out content. We had three different posts go out yesterday talking about playoffs, talking about, Barriel and what it means having Alvarito as part of this team, talking about the DNA of the club, but we're hitting it from all angles. And we really want to be that opportunity and to be that source for fans to have access to talk about the growth of this team in the city.
Mic drop. I'm not going to drop my mic because that would be terrible on the audio, but you know, we said this from the start, and I had a rant, and I'm gonna circle back. So I'm gonna do my rant real quick because it's really three sentences. Trust Lacadia, be patient, and when you're patient, when he scores and when he gets in form, you're welcome. That's all I've got to say to kind of piggyback off what the Post and Warpig said today on Twitter and that
well
article.
Said. Well
phenomenal
said.
Article. Like, just trust the guy. He's a little introverted. Like, he's not the loud going forward, hey, look at me guy. But when you trust him, he came to the United States because he hated the Europe. That's a hate strong word, but he disliked the European pressure of just the fans throwing so much shade for average performance. And that comes with the game. It comes with being a top-tier transfer and a club record transfer. But trust Licata. Give him some time. The dude has not played regularly, literally in a year. All right, piggybacking off that. We're for the fans. We're fans first. We've said that since day one. That's why Travis and I started this. Travis and I have literally met in person twice. That's crazy to think. We talk like more. My wife is annoyed with how much we talk on a daily basis, but we've met twice. Steven, we've met once, but we've built this camaraderie over a team, over a club in FC Cincinnati, right? That's crazy. Like,
unity.
Unity. Name me another sport that's done this. And that's this fan base. And that's what's so important and what's so special to us. And Nick, bringing Nick Marks into this, and you guys really haven't talked to Nick. He hasn't been on here. He'll be on here eventually. But the young pup, as we'll call him, or Carl Marks, kind of a pun we gave him. But the dude is crazy good at what he does. Just through happenstance, we met a guy on the internet, just like Travis and I met, just like we met with Steven. And this guy brings so much to the table, and we continue to grow. And we've had multiple people reach out to us. I can't count the amount of people that have reached out and just said thank you for being honest, being genuine, and having a take, and not being afraid to be honest, and not being afraid of the club giving us backlash. Like, we're kind of feeling that now inadvertently, but that doesn't mean we're going to change. That's what got us here. So it's more or less just a thank you to everybody that supports us, the guys on Patreon. We're not doing that to make a profit. You'll see that here in a few weeks with free merchandise essentially coming out that there's going to be pretty cool stuff that I'll wear to the game, and hopefully some of you guys will wear to games in West End next year. So it's more of just a thank you to kind of piggyback off Travis and Steven. And, you know, being told no and that whole competition thing, being told no just motivates me. You tell me I can't do something, I'm going to show you I can do it. Shooters shoot. There you go. I'll just keep hitting on that terminology. So first and foremost, just thank you. Give us some feedback. Like, if you want to hear something, if we're probably going to dive a little bit into the European game as the Premier League starts back up, and hopefully the world, knock on wood, starts to get more normal, fingers crossed. But we're going to dive into that. I got some ideas that I want to get out there, and that's what this is for. It's for fun. It's for you guys to enjoy yourselves. And if you have something that you don't like what we said, tell us. We got thick skin. That's what we're here for. So, again, just a big thank you to everybody. We'll close it out. We've got Matt coming on, as Travis said. Surprisingly good. Like, credit to that dude. Steven knew him before Travis and I, and very, very polished. And he knows the fire better than anybody probably should. So I'll say that. We'll toss it over there. But thank you to everybody, guys. We got a game tomorrow night. We got a game Saturday. Crew 19, Flavortown Crew, whatever you want to call them. So hell is always going to be real.
That's a fact. We will probably do another show before the crew match or something. I think we'll do something before the crew match so we can properly preview that. I didn't want to kind of lump it in with this one. I said fuck St. John's last week, so we'll pick a different Big East school.
UConn.
That's too easy. Fuck DePaul. The Demon Deacons can go to hell, although they'd probably enjoy it there. But fuck DePaul. Fuck Don Garber.
That's a lot of F-bombs. Let's children
frick. Okay, sorry. Frickin' Frick, Don Garber, Frick even harder, DePaul, Frick off, the Demon Deacons. Better?
It's Demon Deacons. Isn't the Demon Deacons Wake Forest?
Yeah, he's...
Wait, oh, man. Did I mix the...
yeah, you're in ACC country now, buddy.
Oh, okay. Well, fuck that's... Wake Forest. God, what's DePaul? Oh, the blue... What is it? What is it?
They're not important. That's the takeaway, is they're not relevant. That's why you don't know who they are. So we'll just end at that.
Now you know what we're going to do on the podcast. We're going to hold until I can Google this and properly do this. Oh, God.
Can I think blue demons. Are they blue demons?
See, I had one. Yeah, the blue demons. Fuck the blue demons. Sorry, yeah. Frick the blue demons. And also apparently Wake Forest. God, that was really... Today is Monday.
Yeah,
at least I didn't say Travis,
you actually were onto something with DePaul because they're Chicago based.
You know what? I'm so clever.
You didn't even know it.
I didn't even know I did that.
Right.
Yeah. Fuck
DePaul. All right.
It's been Monday. At least I didn't say FC.
That's fair. Cats by 90, guys.
Prost. Thanks for listening, guys.
Cheers, guys. Prost.
Good evening. We've got a special guest tonight on the You Ain't Lying podcast, a guy that I've been following with and chatting with through Twitter for a number of months. We've got Matt with Men in Red with us, who's a huge Chicago Fire fan. Matt, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing really well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, thank you. We really appreciate you coming on and just kind of breaking down how the Chicago Fire, how you see their new coach, new season, new logo, new stadium.
Yep.
You know, big turnover in players, and so we're just excited to chat with you about our FC Cincinnati's opponent tomorrow night and talk about tomorrow night's game as well. So why don't you maybe kind of introduce a little bit of yourself, Matt, and, and talk about the Fire and what you've seen of how they this 2020 season is much different than what you guys have been witnessing over the last couple of seasons.
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, like you said, I'm Matt from Men in Red on Twitter. Running that account for 5 years, approximately. That was around the time I became a friend. And if you know anything about Fire history, 5 years ago, we were kind of in turmoil. Frank Yelop was our coach. I don't know if you guys have heard of that name. And it was a complete mess. Wooden spoon 2 years in a row. Just very bad. Granted, in the 4 years since then, it hasn't gotten much better.
We know about that wooden spoon, Matt, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know what? That in that sense, we're in the same boat. So you guys get that. But it was time for a little bit of a rebrand with the club in 2020. That's what they decided to do. So far, it has mixed success. Obviously, everyone hates the logo, myself included. You guys probably have your opinions on that, too. Probably not positive. But there are certainly some things that we're happy about. We like the quality of players throughout the team in general. We also really like the new FO. There's rumors of a potential new training facility. So everything in that sense is getting upgraded. The team chemistry seems to be really high, but the product on the field, obviously, as you guys probably know, because you've been scouting them out, has not been up to par. So, you know, a lot to look forward to, but also a lot to improve on in the Fire camp for sure.
So, Matt, I guess the first place I want to start is, what are your impressions of the club, Chicago? Right out of the gate, I know with the restart, things have been kind of crazy for some clubs. Some clubs have come out playing well and some a little bit rusty. Kind of give your take on how the Fire have looked since the restart.
Sure. Well, we brought in like 15 or 16 new players, including 7 new homegrown. So the team from last year is completely different. So any Fire fan who really had expectations of putting out a winning side this year are kind of those expectations are overinflated, in my opinion. Like, all these guys are unfamiliar with the league. Alvaro Madron, you know, Robert Berich, Gaston Jimenez, all 3 of our DPs, new center backs, you know, new everything. So it's going to take a while for this team to integrate. And we saw, you know, in that first game against Seattle back in MLS's back, what they were capable of with that 2-1 win. And then we saw, you know, what is probably expected of them at this point in time, the next 2 games versus San Jose and Vancouver. So mixed reviews. A lot of the fan base is already on the Wiki out train, unfortunately. But you got to give the guy at least a year to get his players integrated and get his play style integrated. And that's right now, you know, what we are trying to instill among Fire fans in general.
So, Matt, I'll follow up to that. I ended up watching actually your guys' recent match versus the Crew. And, and in that first half, like, arguably Chicago was the more dangerous side. A few opportunities missed, some passes that were kind of weren't quite connected, things of that nature. I mean, I guess my question for you would be, looking at that and looking at the season so far, do you feel like this team, I mean, the playoff kind of has been adjusted to where 10 teams from the East are going to make it. Do you feel like, you know, Chicago has a chance to make a playoff push, or is this kind of another year where it's just a transition year? I know you, like you mentioned it, ton of turnover, new head coach, new stadium. I'm curious to see how Soldier Field looks with 0 fans in it. That's going to be a little awkward, but
absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, like, where do you see the team, I guess, this year? And then you mentioned that you hit the nail on the head. How long do you give Wiki, you know, is it 1 year? Is it 2 years really to kind of form and bring his players in? Cause we know how that works all too well.
Yeah, no, like you said, that the first 45 minutes of that Columbus game, we showed what we were capable of doing. And if we were able to generate those performances, you know, across the rest of the season, yeah, we'll be in the playoffs. Will we be a high seed? No, there's a lot more talent out there in the East, as you guys know, because you're part of it. But it just depends on which Fire team decides to show up. You also, if you watch the game, you also saw that they're having a lot of finishing issues. If they're able to finish, they'll make the playoffs. If they're not able to finish, they're not going to go anywhere. Defense, you know, isn't the strongest, so we really need to rely on our goal scorers. And if they turn out, which a lot of them have been turning out, besides, you know, Robert Berich, our new DP, then it's going to be a long and slow season. And the odds are in our favor for making the playoffs, so I'm an optimist. I want to say yeah. It's really a 50-50 chance with this Fire team. You never really know what you're going to get. And, you know, as for Wiki, like I said earlier, I think majority of our fan base would agree that you have to allow him the time to integrate all of his ideas and the new club ideals into his system and allow Heights, George Heights, our new technical director, to bring in reinforcements. Because, I mean, just recently, last week, I don't know if you guys saw, we got another center back, Carlos Terran, 19-year-old from Colombia, who's a guy who's going to help enforce our back line, which has needed help. So you need to give Heights a full off season, and you need to give Wiki at least a season and a half to implement his style. And then if nothing improves, you know, you can start to complain a little bit.
And man, I kind of wanted to hit that. You were talking the other day with your friends at Spitting Fire about what is the tactical identity of this team. And that's kind of, you mentioned, you've got three new DPs. You had 18 new signings over the offseason, 14 new players in the roster. You've got the group of Serbians and Slovenians. You've got Argentinians, Colombians. You've got such a different mix of player backgrounds. Where do you see the tactical identity? Because it does seem that Berich is your offense. He's got your most shots on goal. But it looks like Wiki is still trying to figure out how to take all the new talent and integrate it, especially in that midfield of yours.
Yeah, it was really interesting. We've actually already changed formations since MLS is back. We played a five back, and it was not good for us because Berich was really our only source of offense. And now we changed to a four back against Columbus. And so our wingers, who in that game were Georgi Mihaljevic and Frankowski, were able to kind of push up the pitch a little bit more and generate more chances. So that's definitely a tactical change you've seen from just a couple games, Wiki trying to figure out how to generate more offensive. But in terms of his general tactical layout, he's a very possession-based coach. He likes to keep the ball. And the reason we haven't gotten those attacking options is because we haven't been able to keep the ball. There's been some really poor passing out of the back, specifically from our captain, Calvo, who is kind of notorious in the league, kind of definitely a character.
A fellow mixed, Tico. Yeah, another Tico. Yeah,
absolutely. Mixed feelings about him in the Fire camp, that's for sure. Mauricio Pineda, though, has been one of the bright spots in that back line and has been one of the most consistent passers on the team at such a young age, which is good to see for us. But if we are able to, you know, continue to attack going forward and keep the ball, it's going to improve. But like I said, I think a lot of that comes from chemistry and a lot of that comes from learning the league. You know, South America, Gaston Jimenez comes in, completely different league than MLS. MLS is extremely unique in its physical play style and in the way we watch the game. So once they start to develop and get used to that, the tactical identity that Wiki wants will be seen more by people watching the games for sure.
Yeah, and Matt, I guess we'll kind of switch it up just a touch. Seeing, you know, FC Cincinnati so far since the restart, I'm not sure how much you've seen them exactly, but from what you have seen, kind of give your synopsis. Like, what weaknesses do you see with FC Cincinnati that the Fire can kind of exploit? Maybe also the other way around, the weaknesses on the Fire that maybe worry you when it comes to FC Cincinnati.
Is Locadia in? Is he playing? What's the status on him?
He is healthy. He played 90 minutes the other night. Right. He was a post away from scoring the winner, which was unfortunate. He does not, I will be honest, he does not look 100% fit. Sure. He does not look 100% healthy. He looked like he had a hitch in his giddy up still. Could be, you know, he really hasn't played 90 minutes in like 7 months. But he is back, yes.
Yeah, so I watched FCC during MLS's back, specifically the second game, because I was really intrigued on how they, you know, responded after that 4-0 thrashing. After watching that game, I'm like, you know what? This team's garbage. They're not going to do anything. They bounce back in a positive manner, and I'm like, okay, they got some fight in them. And looking, you know, at the team now as we prepare to play you guys Tuesday, I think the main matchup I'm really interested is, you know, Robert Berich versus Kendall Watson. Yep. And Waston obviously hasn't been as great as he was when he played for Vancouver. And it's going to be really interesting to see how those two interact, because Robert Berich is a big fan of basically getting the center back to jump out of the 18 and chase him around. So that's the matchup, you know, if you guys are watching, and obviously I'll be watching, to look out for in my eyes. But I think the Fire and Cincinnati both are going to have the same backline issues, especially with Lacadia. It's whether or not, you know, FCC can outscore the Fire. I think that's going to be the outcome at the end.
I'll piggyback off of that question, Matt. And really, you've kind of surprised me already just with your knowledge. I mean, you're hitting on facts and some names from 5-6 years ago when I initially kind of started to just loosely follow MLS. So my question to you is this. I mean, obviously, you knew of FCC coming into the league, probably heard of our, you know, you played us in the Open Cup. I mean, that's a great example. Yeah, I mean, you're familiar with that. So I always like to ask when we have another fan of another team on, the perception of FC Cincinnati. Like, what's, you know, if you had to describe the team or the fan base in a few sentences, what would that be and why? Kind of a goofy question, I know, but it's kind of cool to always get perspective, right? So, yeah, what are your thoughts?
Listen, I'm a Fire fan, so we don't really have the best fan base in terms of getting out to games and just general perception of our team. So I look at a team like FCC, and I'm very impressed by what they've been able to do off the field. You know, your student – or not your student section. Wow, your supporters, phenomenal. High energy. Sorry, still in college mode. But
a lot of energy. Them are students. It's okay. Yeah,
yeah. You guys get a lot of people to your games, even if you're not performing at a super high level, which is something historically the Fire can't do. And, you know, you guys are starting to get the players that you and your fans really, really want, which is also something the Fire can't do. So overall, you know, for a small market team, Cincinnati's not the biggest market. You guys are definitely on the up and coming, and it's really enjoyable to watch, because I do like watching expansion teams and teams that are new to the league succeed, because it's very good and healthy, you know, for the rest of the original teams like my Fire.
You know, Matt, I've heard you talk about the Fire a bit recently, and so I'm going to kind of maybe throw you a softball a little bit, but I've heard you kind of state that what they're missing is a playmaker, is maybe potentially a number 10 in that lineup to unlock the offense. And, you know, maybe it's pushing Frankowski up a little bit further with Berich, but maybe kind of talk about where you see where Wiki could make some tweaks that would be impactful against someone like an FC Cincinnati as we come into town tomorrow night.
Yeah, so in our game against Columbus, his tactics were actually really interesting. Our third DP, 19-year-old Ignacio Aliceta, who is traditionally a left winger, he was shoved into the cam position. And the reasoning behind this, and you guys will see Tuesday once he inevitably ends up starting, is he doesn't have a weak foot. He has no left foot, so he's only on his right. And that's a lot of trouble for a left winger. But at the same time, you know, instead of putting Aliceta at the left wing, Wiki put Georgi Mihaljevic, who I think should be playing the 10 until you can bring in, you know, that number 10 who's really going to give you a lift, because Georgi, solid player, not that guy. So I think Wiki needs to flip that around and just, you know, Seda will do what he does to the best he can do it. Put Georgi back into the middle, because I really think that's going to help unlock, you know, the FCC defense and provide more attacking opportunity.
Yeah, and speaking of the FCC defense, I know I saw some comments earlier where, I don't know if it was the Chicago Fire manager or someone involved with Chicago Fire mentioned that they expected a very low block. Is that what the Fire, maybe supporters and maybe manager, believe? Is they're going to see a really low block from FC Cincinnati, even though we really didn't see that in the last match with them against DC United? Yes, they played defensive for the first 20 minutes, but DC United was really effective in the high press.
Sure.
FC Cincinnati wants to push the ball, especially with everybody healthy now. So, all right, does that worry you a little bit that maybe the Fire are expecting a really low block and maybe they may not see that? I know they're expecting to see a 5-3-2, but I think it's going to play more like a 3-5-2 with wingbacks really attacking. So does that concern you at all?
You know, Wiki, as opposed to managers of the past, is really good at changing tactics mid-game or formations mid-game. So obviously, if they're going into that with the mindset, it's not good, because that means their scouting is not to par. which we don't want off the bat. But I do feel confident that if Wiki feels the need to make a change, he's not happy with one of the decisions he made beforehand. The team is mature enough to kind of change that during the 20th or 10th minute, whenever he feels the need to do that, for sure.
I'll stick to the defense, and we'll tie it back into one, Andrew Gutman. I'd love to get your thoughts.
Man.
Yeah, you go. Your thoughts. I mean, obviously, you know, IU, Chicago Fire, homegrown, the whole thing. I mean, just with him going to Celtic and leaving MLS, and then obviously coming back with FC Cincinnati. I mean, what's your take on him as a player? Because you've probably seen equal amount of time of him, and just even in you know, practice and footage and whatnot, but what's your take on him as a player, and what do you think his ceiling is? Because the last few games for us, he is really kind of coming to his own. He's supplanted Greg Garza as our left back or left wing back right now with the way we're playing, but what's his ceiling? I mean, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Gutman's a really talented player. There's a reason he was signed by Celtic. Really great talent, especially going forward, which in modern day, you know, fullback play, you need to go forward. You can't just be a traditional Jonathan Bornstein-like left back over there in the corner. And he's got the pace, he's got the dribbling, he's got the vision. He really has everything you could want. And as for a ceiling, like, he's young. He's still, what, 22, 23 in that range. I think he's 23. He could be a U.S. men's national team caliber left back in the future, especially considering, you know, outside of Anthony Robinson and like Daniel Lovitz, there's not much going on in that department. And I'm sure at some point he's been scouted. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm sure he's had some youth opportunities. In fact, I'm almost 100% sure he has. So there is no reason, you know, his ceiling can't be U.S. men's national team capability. Absolutely no reason.
Yeah, unfortunately for Lovitz, he's down in purgatory in Nashville. So, you know, I think it's a great opportunity for Gutman to shine over the next couple of years. Matt, are there questions you've got for us as you're thinking about tomorrow night's game, about FC Cincinnati or what we see from our perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to hear what you guys think of this Fire team, your take on it, because the rest of the league really doesn't know much about our team. A lot of really unknown players. But what, from the FCC point of view or the outside of Chicagoland point of view, what do you guys see in the Fire that's scary, as opposed to what do you guys see that's not scary? Are you guys ready? What's going on?
Counterattack. I was really impressed with the Fire counterattack against the Crew in the first half. I know this FC Cincinnati team wants to play more forward. I know Jaap Stam does not want to play low block all the time. He wants to go 3-5-2, 4-3-3, keep possession, be dangerous on the ball. But the Fire's counterattack was pretty impressive. Like we talked about before, you know, the Fire were maybe the more impressive club in the first half against the Crew and just kind of fell into some bad luck. So that's kind of what scares me the most. I know we talked about how they really kind of need a 10 to kind of open things up, and that, you know, the 19-year-old DP could be the guy for that position, even though he is so right-footed. The counterattack for me is where it gets me, because I think we're getting to the point with FC Cincinnati where the players are getting confident, and more confidence leads to more attacking, and more attacking leads to susceptibility to counterattack. So that for me, and Nate, I'll let you take over. That for me is my biggest worry with the Fire.
Yeah, I mean, just hitting on that Crew game, like, that's the first time I've really watched the Fire. I kind of half watched the Seattle game and MLS is back, more highlights than anything, because of the upset, kind of like, okay, let's go back and watch some highlights. But watching that Crew game, you guys absolutely had the chance to not only, you know, draw, but most likely get 3 points there if you finish. Some of the high press worked, and it wasn't really a strategic high press from what I saw, but more of just, you know, we're gonna push a little bit, and if we get the ball, which you did, then obviously attack. And there was just a few balls that just kind of were left to be desired, that if the Fire complete those passes or Barrich gets some real opportunities. Looking at the stats of that Crew game, he actually had the least touches of any outfield player, which, you know, obviously distribution, right? So to Travis's point, if you guys can hit us on the break, and we've got some pace with our wingbacks, but outside of that, our center backs, Kendall Watson is a great example, aren't super mobile. It's going to be real interesting. You know, we've gone 300 consecutive minutes without allowing a goal. Knock on wood, literally, I'm knocking on wood. But that being said, like, we don't want to get too arrogant. And I kind of look at the Fire as this is, don't take any offense to this, but with the amount of turnover you've had on the roster as a very talented expansion team. I mean, that's that, you know, just a lot of new faces kind of gelling. And once they start to hit their stride, that's when they become dangerous. And that's kind of my fear that they do that this game. You know, there's going to be obviously some feeling behind it playing in Soldier Field. Should be a cool atmosphere, even though there's no fans. But again, that was for us at Nippert this past weekend. That was our first game back on home soil. So I'm interested to see how that kind of plays out. And I'm like to Travis's point, I'm worried about you guys on the break. And I think we're vulnerable there. So, Steven, I'll let you finish it off, buddy.
Yeah, and I'll kind of echo a little bit of what you just said, Nate, is from a you know, player individuality on the Fire, there's a number of players I really like. Frankowski, you brought up Mihailovic. I mean, Barrich, you know, he's going to get his goals. I think the biggest question for you guys has been Madron and Jimenez, and how is Wiki going to play those two guys, and how they're going to work together. And so individually, I really like your roster a lot. It's the chemistry and how is it going to come together. And I just hope it's not tomorrow night. I hope it's after the FC Cincinnati.
I do hope it's tomorrow night. Fire fans are getting a little bit impatient. That's for sure.
I do think that if you throw out, you know, the back line that you have, I do think Locati is going to get at least one, because you have a smallish back line when it comes to size, and whether it's a set piece or it's Locati is very strong.
He's a brute,
and he's had some bad luck as well, like Barrich has, and so, you know, it's going to be an interesting match between you brought it up is how, you know, some of these center back and forward combinations, if it's Waston and Barrich, or if it's Pineda and you know, and Locadia, or if you even put Omberg in there, it's really going to be tasty to see what some of these matchups produce tomorrow night.
Oh, absolutely. And there is a really good chance that Wyatt Omsberg is going to make an appearance, and simply because he's tall, he's like 6'2", and he's a little bit stronger than Calvo is, even though Calvo still might be in the lineup somehow. But we do have, you know, the smallest back line in the league, I believe, was what some of the Fire, you know, reporters and everything were saying. Calvo's not that big. Mauricio's tall, but he's not filled out. So Locadia, you know, he's going to run the defense into the ground. Like I said, I think it's going to come down to who can expose the defense more. And right now, you guys are on a big hot streak. Like you said, I believe Travis said 300 minutes, something like that, which, you know, for FCC, who last year were spilling goals into their net like nobody's business. Like, that's very 75. Impressive.
75.
And yep. And that shows that defensive line has matured a little bit. And, you know, coming from the Fire standpoint, obviously that's concerning.
Well,
so Matt, before I ask you for your prediction, who would you take? Would you take Wiki or Stom as your coach?
You know, to be quite honest, Jaap Stom is a really intriguing name. I don't know much about him. Obviously, you guys have mentioned his tactical, you know, style briefly, how he likes to push up. I got faith in my boy Wiki. I like what he's doing so far. Obviously, it hasn't produced the results, but a little bit biased for obvious reasons. But I got to go with Coach Wiki. Absolutely.
So what's your prediction for tomorrow night?
I'm going to give it a nice 2-2 draw. And I think the goals are going to come for both teams. I think Locati is going to get at least one night, but I also think Barrich is going to do it right back to you guys. It could very easily, you know, be 3-2, 2-1 to you guys. I could also see it be the other way around. It's going to be one of those games where we don't really know what's going on until we actually settle down 25 minutes in the game and look at what's going on. But I'll say 2-2. You guys get a point, we get a point. I don't know if that you guys would be happy with that. I would certainly be happy with that at this point.
I'm going 2-1 FC Cincinnati. Nate?
Matt, you hit it on the head, man. Like, again, just this past game for us, we really didn't, the first 20 minutes was like, what are we doing? And then we had possession the majority of the second half. I'm kind of with you. I'm cool with getting a point. I'd like to get three, but who wouldn't? So I'm kind of with you. I'm going to go 2-2 draw as well. Just because I think even 1-1, I could think, just because we haven't had the best of luck of scoring. You know, in MLS's back was 1-0, 1-0, you know, kind of bunkering down. And Locati is not quite in form. So I'll stick to your point of 2-2, but I could see it 1-1 just the same.
Yeah, Nate, you kind of hit mine. I'm 1-1. We did see against DC United the first 20 minutes. We really sat back, and yeah, the high press was troublesome for us. But I kind of look at how Stam is approaching some of these games. He wants the team to keep shape. He wants the team to keep the play in front of him. And so I think it'll be interesting to watch that first portion of the first half. If the Fire come out as strong as they did against the Crew, you could see an early goal from the Fire, and that may change it considerably tomorrow night. But I do look at a 1-1 draw. I do like what you said, Matt. I think Berich gets one. I think Locadia gets one. And we'd be happy with the draw here, I think, in Cincinnati in an away game like that. And we know we're going to face you again September 2nd when you guys return to Cincinnati.
Yeah, sounds about right. I think it's going to all depend on who comes out those first 20 minutes, like you said, Steven. So who could get the jump, who could get the early goal, then we'll see what happens from there.
If they draw, the managers have to fight at midfield.
I'll give that one to Yop. Yeah, no doubt about it.
That's what I thought.
Wiki's more of a model type guy.
Yop will choke somebody. Matt, it was really awesome to have you on, man. You did great. Matt, kind of take a second to kind of plug what you're doing.
Yeah, we got a lot of cool stuff coming over on my Twitter page, including a new podcast coming out called Flaming Takes, which will hopefully, the Twitter page, everything will be made by the end of next week, and we'll be rolling episodes out there. It'll be specifically targeted towards Fire fans and the Fire community, but we will be talking MLS and hopefully being able to bring some fantastic other podcasters from different teams like you guys onto the podcast to do a little pregame and postgame action as well.
Sounds good, Matt. Matt, we very much appreciate you taking time out of your night to join us, and it was really awesome, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, man. This was a blast. Absolutely.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks, Matt.